from the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare, the hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in-store or at mybobs.com to play now.
You're working from home. You settle in with a cup of coffee, ready to get the day started. Before you look at that to-do list, turn on your favorite Odyssey sports station on your smart speaker. We'll keep you company and bring you the latest updates from your teams while you tackle your inbox or get ready for another meeting that probably could have been an email. Power through the workday with the entertaining sports coverage you love from the local voices you trust. Just ask your smart speaker to play your favorite station.
The Parkinson Spiegel Show.
Those radio losers, nobody cares about them.
Afternoons on the Score.
3-2. Out to center. Walking back to the bag is Jimenez. He will tag at third. Here could no throw, and that's the ball game. Emil Jimenez caught both ways next time. That's terrible. Ball game's over. Walking it off, and the White Sox lose the opener.
Wow. Yeah. Okay, so gotta be honest. Didn't see it live. Saw it about 5 minutes, 10 minutes after it happened. It was a really, really, really weird ending to that game.
Yeah, I did not see it live. I was at Cubs last night, and my phone started blowing up about it. Had not heard the TV call because I'd gone on and watched the condensed game on MLB.com and seen some other stuff. Didn't realize the umpire got some ire there after.
Well, the at bat, it was an 0-2 count, and Kopech threw a ball that looked like a strike on the K-Vision that came across just at the bottom of the zone. And so it looked like it should have been a 3-pitch punch out. And the game would have obviously remained tied. But then he spiked a pitch.
Yeah, and I saw that. Like, he caught a spike on the mound on the way down.
Yeah, but I'm saying, like, I think what he's referring to is the non-strike three call.
Yes.
The non-strike three call, which was a great pitch. It probably was a strike, but again, we don't have automated balls and strikes. In a world where there's a challenge system, if you still had a challenge left, you'd use that one, and it probably would have gotten overturned based on the TV graphic. Anyway, based on the TV graphic, it was a strike. But it was so weird, and it's game of inches, all of those cliches, man. Like, it's a great at bat by Kopech. It's a great job. Like, if that pitch is called a strike, 3-pitch strikeout, runner in scoring position, stranded, inning over, you know, tie game. Then it's 1-2. The next pitch, he spikes the ball, throws it 2 feet, and the training staff comes out. Like, what the hell was that? Did you hurt yourself? Like, so now all of a sudden it's like, okay, things are unraveling. There's a runner on third instead of second because he, you know, wild pitched it.
And we're under 2 outs, so all you need is the sacrifice fly to have the winning run come in.
Correct. And so by the way, I guess if that would have been strike three call, it would not have been a guarantee that they would have gotten out of it, but you would have not had the spiked ball, which would have had the runner advance to third, and you would have needed a base hit with 2 outs to win instead of the sacrifice fly. And then the sacrifice fly happens, and Luis Robert doesn't get under the ball and even make a throw. Probably was too deep to matter anyway, but
not
you've got
to
make a play.
You have to make a play. And just a chaotically, dim thought from Luis to not get under it. And what we have seen is him not doing some of the basic fundamentals of center field play for a long, long time. I mean, it's got to be 4 years, at least 3 years, since I remember going off on a rant about him not getting under a fly ball to make a throw specifically for a sacrifice fly and being so angry. I remember still the visceral anger of being like, Darryl Boston is a loyalty hire who remains as a as an outfield coach and a base coach who obviously is not teaching these guys anything and they have to learn at the big league level because the farm system is bad. But anyway, here we are this far into the dude's career, a five-tool player supposedly, not knowing and executing fundamentally what you're supposed to do was absolutely horrific to watch on that play.
Yeah, it was really, really bad. Again, you said it doesn't matter. If the ball would have been hit 380 feet,
we're
you're
saying
not trying.
What doesn't matter?
You said it doesn't matter that the ball was probably too deep that he can't even make the runner's scoring either way.
Well, what I mean is you make the throw because a guy could fall, a guy could trip.
Correct.
I mean anything could happen.
Miss home plate.
Hey, you'd miss home plate and then you've got him. I mean. You get under it. It's the fundamentals of like, all right, get under and when that ball hits your glove, you are ready to have just that little crow hop and throw. You're in position.
You're charging into the ball so that you can get maximum velocity on the throw to give yourself a chance, even if it's a 1% or 2% chance.
I remember being the bat boy for my older brother's high school team when they had outfield practice and he was being taught how to deal with a sacrifice fly. And then we would watch the Red Sox outfield of Fred Lynn and Jim Rice and Dwight Evans, and they all did it right. I mean, what the hell? It's still the most basic stuff in baseball, and the White Sox are such a broken organization that absolute jewels of the team come all the way up and still don't know how to do it when they've been in the big leagues for years. It's insane.
Well, I'm sure Tom Hamilton, who's had a thought or three on the White Sox from afar, I'm sure he handled the call with an appropriate amount of grace.
Now the 0-2. And it just missed low. If it did miss... One ball, two strikes. I don't think the White Sox are inviting Emil Jimenez to their team party later this year. The 1-2. And it goes all the way to the backstop. And it went behind the batter as Kopech stumbled, making his delivery to home plate. And now the winning run at third. May have caught a spike in delivering that ball as it just went flying out of his hand to the backstop behind the hitter. He almost fell down delivering it. And now the winning run 90 feet from home, and now the White Sox have to bring the infield in. A 2-2 count. One out. A 6-6 game in the ninth. And now Charlie Montoyo, the bench coach and former Toronto Blue Jays manager, is coming out to the mound with the White Sox trainer to make sure Kopech is okay. One out, 6-6 in the ninth. Everybody on their feet at the corner of Carnegie and Ontario. Kopech is ready. Here's the 2-2 pitch. High, and he almost threw it away. Martin Maldonado with a leaping grab, and the count is full. And for Kopech, he may be a little bit rattled. He's uncorked 5 wild pitches this year. Winning run at third and a full count with one down in the ninth. The payoff pitch. A swing and a high fly, medium deep center. This will be interesting. Robert makes the catch, tagging Jimenez. The throw to the plate, nowhere near in time. Ball game is over. A game-winning sacrifice fly. As Bo Naylor walks off the White Sox twice, Luis Robert took a strange approach to that fly ball to medium deep center. He drifted back on it. He never went back, then charged it with his momentum taking him to home plate. And the Guardians get a bizarre win tonight on a sack fly by Bo Naylor. and beat the White Sox 7-6.
So odd.
Dude,
so
we're tracking new ways for the White Sox to lose.
Yeah.
Add it to the list.
Yeah, man. Like they continue to be an improv comic giving you absolute gold nightly. They're the Robin Williams of losing. And that is a new one. I've never seen the sacrifice fly where they don't even bother to make a throw.
Sure you have, but it's like when it's been like I said, 380 feet. You know what I mean? When it's super deep, when you're going back on a ball, like when there's no chance for it. But a ball at that depth, there's always a throw in.
Even then, I feel like they turn and they throw it just in case dude falls down or in case something happens. It's like, certainly not at that depth. Does he not care? You'd never want to put that on a guy.
Horrible look.
It's a horrible look, and it's frankly just a really weird bad baseball instinct to show off and add to the pile as the trade deadline approaches. It really is.
I saw a lot of that online, actually. The clip was circulating on a few of the the MLB accounts, not the official Major League Baseball accounts, but the foul territories and the MLB social media channels. And I was just checking the comments, and it was like a lot of Phillies fans being like, "Eh, no thanks," for whatever that's worth, which is probably nothing, but definitely a lot of teams that are in the buyer's market that have seen reports of Robert being available that have had their team linked to him, seeing that play and be like, "Ugh, that's unappetizing."
And Pedro Grifol after the game said that it was too deep, right? Said it was too deep, and it's just, you shouldn't even be picking
apart. He did not
take
a public stance of having a problem with it. No.
Yeah.
Robert had a really good game offensively. He said he didn't think he had a chance in the last play. Is that what you kind of said?
First of all, he's playing in, because there's one out. Ball was hit 309 feet, 310 feet. He's playing in. He's going back. Even if he runs back and comes in, there's no play there. I mean, if we're going to dissect that, we're making something out of nothing, really. You're not going to throw that guy out from there.
All right, cutting his guy a break, making an apology for his guy. I mean, that fits. Look, Pedro has not said anything publicly. I mean, other than the one time where he said we are flat and effing flat, and and his own guys were like, "No, we were not. We very much disagree with that." I mean, Pedro has stood by his guys to complete and utter extents.
Yeah,
man.
I mean, I'd like to know. I mean, is there? There's got to be data. There's data on your sport for everything. On deepest fly ball where a guy has been thrown out at the plate. It probably would have taken tripping and falling, missing home plate, rupturing an Achilles. You know what I mean? It probably would have taken an act of God.
Look, it's just the latest example of innumerable examples of them in terms of fundamental things. And just when you have an org that is broken from the top on down in like how to build stuff, how to teach stuff, how to deliver finished products, or at least mostly finished products, to the big leagues, you get stuff like this. When you have chaos like all through your organization, and maybe the new guys, Barfield and Bannister, and yes, Getz can try to right a ship, but it is a big operation that takes years to set up correctly. And when it's not set up correctly, you get stuff like this as just a symptom where your best player, your five-tool jewel, has a moment like that. And we're all realizing what an incomplete player he actually is. So what a bummer, man.
The other high-profile White Sox who's been linked in trade stuff, this from Scott Merkin 15 minutes ago, who covers the Sox, asked Pedro if Crochet's last first-half start could be Saturday in Miami, again watching his innings. His reply, quote, "We have it mapped out in a way where if he's selected to the All-Star game, he'll be available to pitch. I think that's extremely important."
That's cool.
Yeah.
Good for him.
Yeah. I mean, obviously, if the team was in contention and he was on this innings limit, you'd want it saved. But given that he's having beyond a career year, one of the best seasons of any pitcher in all of baseball, and you're going exactly nowhere, let the guy have the moment of using an inning in the All-Star game. I think that's totally fine.
Yeah. I hope for Sox fan this org finds a way to drag itself out of the muck and become something more than a laughing stock.
Yeah, me too. And that's my problem with perpetual rebuilds is when you get these prospects, they're coming from all these different systems. And it's like, why are these teams giving up on these guys? Sometimes it's because they don't know how to play baseball the right way. And they're learning the game from different people
Yes. In
different orgs. So when they all come here, no one's on the same page almost ever. And like you said, Speaks, hopefully they're beginning now because I know they've got smart people in place. Mm-hmm. But that stuff takes years.
Right. Did you guys cover this? It was a day that I was off. The stuff that Tobias Myers, who's been a nice surprise as a pitcher for the Brewers, said in the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel about the White Sox. Because he was there in 2022 and it didn't go well.
I know we talked about it in the group thread that day. I don't remember if we did it on the show, Danny.
Yeah, I think it didn't make the show that day.
Seven starts for Tobias Myers when he was with the White Sox in the minors. An ERA north of 15 and got DFA'd back to the market. And Myers has been a big part of what the Brewers have done. They're scrambling, but he's been a nice part of what the Brewers have done. Here's what Myers said about the White Sox in the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel last week. Quote, "They just can't help anyone, in my opinion. Maybe they've changed a little bit since then, but I always tell people now that if you don't have anything figured out, don't go to the White Sox," unquote. Now that's a dude who's been DFA'd by a bunch of people, bounced around a bunch of organizations, and it's rough because a lot of these guys, they become creations when an organization unlocks something or figures something out, whether it's a pitch mix or they teach them something or they find something technically or whatever it is, and that's... He's not the first one, nor will he be the last one, to voice that opinion about the White Sox, that they're just not, they're not going to fix you when you get here. Remember Lucas Giolito going outside the org. Remember Danny Farquhar coming back from a time in Tampa Bay, and they're like, oh, you know stuff you learned in Tampa? Would you please now just work for us instead as a pitcher on a redemption trip?
They ended up giving him power. That's what Bannister was supposed to change, though.
Yeah, but it's baseball's a big bus that makes a slow turn. I hope that Bannister can change some stuff, but it's kind of like asking counsel to be like a partner of a GM and fix a whole bunch of things in the organization in half a year. You know, it's like it's a big bus and it makes a slow turn.
You went to a baseball game with a member of the Rolling Stones last night. We haven't gotten nearly enough stories about that. We have Peter's ponderings in 20 minutes, and this is going to shock exactly no one, but Spiegs is getting a little sports sentimental.
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare, the hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in-store or at mybobs.com to play now.
You're working from home. You settle in with a cup of coffee, ready to get the day started. Before you look at that to-do list, turn on your favorite Odyssey sports station on your smart speaker. We'll keep you company and bring you the latest updates from your teams while you tackle your inbox or get ready for another meeting that probably could have been an email. Power through the workday with the entertaining sports coverage you love from the local voices you trust. Just ask your smart speaker to play your favorite station.
The Parkinson Spiegel Show.
Those radio losers, nobody cares about them.
Afternoons on the Score.
3-2. Out to center. Walking back to the bag is Jimenez. He will tag at third. Here could no throw, and that's the ball game. Emil Jimenez caught both ways next time. That's terrible. Ball game's over. Walking it off, and the White Sox lose the opener.
Wow. Yeah. Okay, so gotta be honest. Didn't see it live. Saw it about 5 minutes, 10 minutes after it happened. It was a really, really, really weird ending to that game.
Yeah, I did not see it live. I was at Cubs last night, and my phone started blowing up about it. Had not heard the TV call because I'd gone on and watched the condensed game on MLB.com and seen some other stuff. Didn't realize the umpire got some ire there after.
Well, the at bat It was an 0-2 count, and Kopech threw a ball that looked like a strike on the K-Vision that came across just at the bottom of the zone. And so it looked like it should have been a three-pitch punch-out, and the game would have obviously remained tied. But then he spiked a pitch.
Yeah, and I saw that. Like, he caught a spike on the mound on the way down.
Yeah, but I'm saying, like, I think what he's referring to is the non-strike three call.
Yes.
The non-strike three call, which was a great pitch. It probably was a strike, but again, we don't have automated balls and strikes. In a world where there's a challenge system, if you still had a challenge left, you'd use that one, and it probably would have gotten overturned based on the TV graphic. Anyway, based on the TV graphic, it was a strike. But it was so weird, and it's game of inches, all of those cliches, man. Like, it's a great at-bat by Kopech. It's a great job. Like, if that pitch is called a strike, three-pitch strikeout, runner in scoring position, stranded, inning over, you know, tie game. Then it's 1-2. The next pitch, he spikes the ball, throws it 2 feet, and the training staff comes out. Like, what the hell was that? Did you hurt yourself? Like, so now all of a sudden it's like, okay, things are unraveling. There's a runner on third instead of second because he, you know, wild pitched it.
And we're under two outs, so all you need is the sacrifice fly to have the winning run come in.
Correct. And so by the way, I guess if that would have been strike three call, it would not have been a guarantee that they would have gotten out of it, but you would have not had the spiked ball, which you would have had the runner advance to third, and you would have needed a base hit with two outs to win instead of the sacrifice fly. And then the sacrifice fly happens, and Luis Robert doesn't get under the ball and even make a throw. Probably was too deep to matter anyway, but
not
you've
the
got
point.
To make a play.
You have to make a play. And just a chaotically, dim thought from Luis to not get under it, and what we have seen is him not doing some of the basic fundamentals of center field play for a long, long time. I mean, it's got to be 4 years, at least 3 years, since I remember going off on a rant about him not getting under a fly ball to make a throw specifically for a sacrifice fly and being so angry. I remember still the visceral anger of being like, Darryl Boston is a loyalty hire who remains as an outfield coach and a base coach who obviously is not teaching these guys anything, and they have to learn at the big league level because the farm system is bad. But anyway, here we are this far into the dude's career, a five-tool player supposedly, not knowing and executing fundamentally what you're supposed to do was absolutely horrific to watch on that play.
Yeah, it was really, really bad. You said it doesn't matter. If the ball would have been hit 380 feet,
what,
you're
we're
not
saying
trying.
What doesn't matter? What
you mean? Said it doesn't matter that the ball was probably too deep that he can't even make the runner's scoring either way.
Well, what I mean is you make the throw because a guy could fall, a guy could trip.
Correct.
I mean, anything could happen.
Miss home plate.
Hey, you could miss home plate, and then you've got him. I mean. You get under it. It's the fundamentals of, like, all right, get under, and when that ball hits your glove, you are ready to have just that little crow hop and throw. You're in
position.
You're
charging into the ball so that you can get maximum velocity on the throw to give yourself a chance, even if it's a 1 or 2% chance.
I remember being the bat boy for my older brother's high school team when they had outfield practice, and he was being taught how to deal with a sacrifice fly. And then we would watch the Red Sox outfield of Fred Lynn and Jim Rice and Dwight Evans, and they all did it right. I mean, what the hell? It's still the most basic stuff in baseball, and the White Sox are such a broken organization that absolute jewels of the team come all the way up and still don't know how to do it when they've been in the big leagues for years. It's insane.
Well, I'm sure Tom Hamilton, who's had a thought or three on the White Sox from afar, I'm sure he handled the call with an appropriate amount of grace.
Now the 0-2. And it just missed low, if it did miss. One ball, two strikes. I don't think the White Sox are inviting Emil Jimenez to their team party later this year. The 1-2. And it goes all the way to the backstop. And it went behind the batter as Kopech stumbled, making his delivery to home plate. And now the winning run at third. Kopech may have caught a spike in delivering that ball as it just went flying out of his hand to the backstop behind the hitter. He almost fell down delivering it. And now the winning run 90 feet from home. And now the White Sox have to bring the infield in. A 2-2 count. One out. A 6-6 game in the ninth. And now Charlie Montoyo, the bench coach and former Toronto Blue Jays manager, is coming out to the mound with the White Sox trainer to make sure Kopech is okay. One out, 6-6 in the ninth. Everybody on their feet at the corner of Carnegie and Ontario. Kopech is ready. Here's the 2-2 pitch. High, and he almost threw it away. Martin Maldonado with a leaping grab, and the count is full. And for Kopech, he may be a little bit rattled. He's uncorked 5 wild pitches this year. Winning run at third and a full count with one down in the ninth. The payoff pitch. A swing and a high fly, medium deep center. This will be interesting. Robert makes the catch. Tagging Jimenez. The throw to the plate. Nowhere near in time. Ball game is over. A game winning sacrifice fly. As Bo Naylor walks off the White Sox twice, Luis Robert took a strange approach to that fly ball to medium deep center. He drifted back on it. He never went back, then charged it with his momentum, taking him to home plate. And the Guardians get a bizarre win tonight on a sack fly by Bo Naylor and beat the White Sox 7-6.
So odd.
Dude,
so
we're tracking new ways for the White Sox to lose.
Yeah.
Add it to the list.
Yeah, man. Like they continue to be an improv comic giving you absolute gold nightly. They're the Robin Williams of losing. And that is a new one. I've never seen the sacrifice fly where they don't even bother to make a throw.
Well, you have, but it's like when it's been, like I said, 380 feet. You know what I mean? When it's super deep, when you're going back on a ball, like when there's no chance for it, but a ball at that depth, there's always a throw in.
Even then, I feel like they turn and they throw it just in case dude falls down or in case something happens. It's like, certainly not at that depth. Does he not care? You'd never want to put that on a guy.
Horrible look.
It's a horrible look, and it's frankly just a really weird bad baseball instinct to show off and add to the pile as the trade deadline approaches. It really is. You know,
I saw a lot of that online. Actually, the clip was circulating on a few of the the MLB accounts, not the official Major League Baseball accounts, but the foul territories and the MLB social media channels. And I was just checking the comments, and it was like a lot of Phillies fans being like, no thanks, for whatever that's worth, which is probably nothing.
Mm.
But definitely a lot of teams that are in the buyer's market that have seen reports of Robert being available that have had their team linked to him, seeing that play and be like, ugh. That's unappetizing.
And Pedro Grifol after the game said that it was too deep, right? Said it was too deep, and it's just, you shouldn't even be picking
apart. He did not
take
a public stance of having a problem with it. No.
Yeah.
Robert had a really good game offensively. He said he didn't think he had a chance in the last play. Is that what you kind of said?
Well, first of all, he's playing in, because there's 1-0. ball was hit 309 feet, 310 feet. He's playing in, he's going back. You know, even if he runs back and comes in, I mean, there's no play there. I mean, if we're going to dissect that, we're making something out of nothing, really. You're not going to throw that guy out from there.
All right, cutting his guy a break, making an apology for his guy. I mean, that fits. Look, Pedro has not said anything publicly. I mean, other than the one time where he said we are flat and effing flat, and, you know, and his own guys were like, no, we were not. We very much disagree with that. I mean, Pedro has stood by his guys to complete and utter extents.
Yeah.
Man.
I mean, I'd like to know, I mean, is there... There's got to be data. There's data on your sport for everything. On deepest fly ball where a guy has been thrown out at the plate. Like it probably would have taken tripping and falling, missing home plate, rupturing an Achilles. You know what I mean? It probably would have taken an act of God.
Look, it's just this is just the kind of stuff. It's just the latest example of innumerable examples of them in terms of fundamental things. And just when you have an org that is broken from the top on down, and like how to build stuff, how to teach stuff, how to deliver finished products, or at least mostly finished products, to the big leagues, you get stuff like this. When you have chaos like all through your organization, and maybe the new guys, Barfield and Bannister, and yes, Getz can try to right a ship, but it is a big operation that takes years to set up correctly. And when it's not set up correctly, you get stuff like this as just a symptom where your best player, your five-tool jewel, has a moment like that. And we're all realizing what an incomplete player he actually is. So what a bummer, man.
The other high-profile White Sox who's been linked in trade stuff, this from Scott Merkin 15 minutes ago, who covers the Sox, asked Pedro if Crochet's last first-half start could be Saturday in Miami, again watching his innings. His reply, quote, "We have it mapped out in a way where if he's selected to the All-Star game, he'll be available to pitch. I think that's extremely important."
That's cool.
Yeah.
Good. Good for him.
Yeah. I mean, obviously, you know, if the team was in contention and he was on this innings limit, you'd want it saved. But given that he's having beyond a career year, one of the best seasons of any pitcher in all of baseball, and you're going exactly nowhere, let the guy have the moment of using an inning in the All-Star game. I think that's totally fine.
Yeah. I hope for Sox fan this org finds a way to drag itself out of the muck and become something more than a laughing stock.
Yeah, me too. And that's my problem with perpetual rebuilds is when you get these prospects, they're coming from all these different systems. And it's like, why are these teams giving up on these guys? Sometimes it's because they don't know how to play baseball the right way. And they're learning the game from different people
in
different orgs. So when they all come here, no one's on the same page almost ever. And like you said, Speaks, hopefully they're beginning now because I know they've got smart people in place. Mm-hmm. But that stuff takes years.
Right. Did you guys cover this? It was a day that I was off. The stuff that Tobias Myers, who's been a nice surprise as a pitcher for the Brewers, said in the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel about the White Sox. Because he was there in 2022 and it didn't go well.
I know we talked about it in the group thread that day. I don't remember if we did it on the show, Danny.
Yeah, I think it didn't make the show that day.
Seven starts for Tobias Myers when he was with the White Sox in the minors. An ERA north of 15 and got DFA'd back to the market. And Myers has been a big part of what the Brewers have done. They're scrambling, but he's been a nice part of what the Brewers have done. Here's what Myers said about the White Sox in the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel last week. Quote, "They just can't help anyone, in my opinion. Maybe they've changed a little bit since then, but I always tell people now that if you don't have anything figured out, don't go to the White Sox," unquote. Now that's a dude who's been DFA'd by a bunch of people, bounced around a bunch of organizations, and it's rough because a lot of these guys, they become creations when an organization unlocks something or figures something out, whether it's a pitch mix or they teach them something or they find something technically or whatever it is, and that's... He's not the first one, nor will he be the last one, to voice that opinion about the White Sox, that they're just not, they're not going to fix you when you get here. Remember Lucas Giolito going outside the org. Remember Danny Farquhar coming back from a time in Tampa Bay, and they're like, "Oh, you know stuff you learned in Tampa? Would you please now just work for us instead as a pitcher on a redemption trip?"
They ended up giving him power. That's what Bannister was supposed to change, though.
Yeah, but it's baseball's a big bus that makes a slow turn. I hope that Bannister can change some stuff. But it's kind of like it's kind of like asking counsel to be like a partner of a GM and fix a whole bunch of things in the organization in half a year. You know, it's like it's a big bus and it makes a slow turn.
You went to a baseball game with a member of the Rolling Stones last night. We haven't gotten nearly enough stories about that. We have Peter's ponderings in 20 minutes, and this is going to shock exactly no one. But Spiegs is getting a little sports sentimental.
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare. The hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in-store or at mybobs.com to play now.
Trying to figure out what to eat for dinner yet again? With Knorr Sides and Bouillon as your not-so-secret ingredient, you can skip the drive-thru and do dinner at home. Knorr Taste Combos provide a menu of delicious, affordable, and well-balanced meals that you can prepare in 30 minutes or less. Visit Knorr.com to get quick and easy recipe ideas for your home-cooked weeknight dinners. It's not fast food, but it's so good.
You're working from home. You settle in with a cup of coffee, ready to get the day started. Before you look at that to-do list, turn on your favorite Odyssey sports station on your smart speaker. We'll keep you company and bring you the latest updates from your teams while you tackle your inbox or get ready for another meeting that probably could have been an email. Power through the workday with the entertaining sports coverage you love from the local voices you trust. Just ask your smart speaker to play your favorite station.